Happy Friday, everyone. I hope you're looking forward to the Lord's Day this weekend and that you've got a good, strong relationship with your home congregation. If you don't, you need to work on that. And if you don't even have a congregation at all, you need to find one and get plugged in there. If you are looking for a place right now and you're within driving distance of the Elkhart East Building, I'd invite you to come check us out. I also like to say thank you on Fridays to those of you who make this program possible on this radio station. God bless you for that. Let's get into the Word today by opening to Joshua chapter number 7. We just saw the fall of Jericho. Sometimes we call it the Battle of Jericho. I mean, as a little kid, Joshua fought the Battle of Jericho was one of our favorite songs we like to sing. But it really wasn't much of a fight because it involved 7 days of divine parades where Israel just simply went out quietly and walked around Jericho, only blowing the trumpets. Following the Ark of the Covenant, which is the throne of God in portable form. And then on the seventh day, they went around 7 times. And then at the signal of Joshua, they all had the trumpets blow really loud. And then they shouted, and those walls collapsed right down, straight down, into the dry moat. And Israel was able to walk right straight in to Jericho. And as I've told you, I think the vast majority of inhabitants in Jericho were probably up on that exterior wall when it fell. And so there probably wasn't much military mop-up that needed to be done by the Israelis when they went in. However, we're told, leave everything where it's at and burn the city, with this exception. Pick up all of the silver, the gold, the bronze, and the iron, and bring that down to the tabernacle area. That's going to belong to the Lord for future use, obviously. But nobody's supposed to pick up anything else, and nobody is supposed to take any of that metal for themselves, and then burn the city where it's at, and then leave it. And apparently, Jericho is nothing but a ruin for many, many centuries after that. However, we find out here that somebody didn't listen. Verse 1 of chapter 7 says, "But the people of Israel broke faith in regard to the devoted things, for Achan," and actually, his name is much more likely ending with the letter R. In Hebrew, the letter N and the letter R look very similar. And so if a scribe kind of gets a little short on forming the top of his R shape, it can look like a final N. So more than likely, his name is Achor, for Achor, the son of Carmi, the son of Zabdi, son of Zerah, of the tribe of Judah, so this is a Judean, took some of the devoted things. So he took something from the city rubble that he was not supposed to take. And the anger of he who is burned against the people of Israel. Now Joshua sent men from Jericho to Ai. Now Ai, and that's as close as I can get to the Hebrew. The Greek is interesting because it's actually G-A-I in the way that it's spelled, which represents that guttural first sound, Ai. So he sent people from Jericho, because Gilgal, their encampment, is right next to Jericho. Up the wadi, a wadi is a wet weather stream. We could call it a creek. It forms a canyon, so you can think of it as a canyon or an arroyo, a dry canyon. This goes on the south side of Jericho, up toward the west, up into the hill country of Canaan proper, and it curves around until finally it comes to the twin cities of Ai and Luz, which also has the name Bethel. So there, that's the next city that Joshua is planning on taking. Now, why does he want to go there? Well, he's got the fords of Jordan covered now. The Israelis are spreading out and taking control of the southern Jordan Valley. I don't know how far north they might go, but they definitely have this lower area covered. There is a road that, now don't think of a highway, don't think of a asphalt, just think of a trade route. There's a trade route that goes up that wadi area, up that valley, to the central ridgeline that goes north and south in Canaan. And Luz and Ai, or Bethel and Ai, are right there near the crossroads of these east-west, north-south trade routes. So he's now trying to take over one of the crossroads in Canaan. Very sound strategic planning. From there, we know his plan is to go northward about another 20-some miles and take Shechem, because Shechem is where they're going to do their blessing and cursing ceremony later in this first year. So he is trying to anchor Israel into the Promised Land. He's basically setting up a beachhead, if you want to use good military terms. So he sent men from Jericho to Ai, which is near Beth-Aven, east of Bethel. Beth-Aven will eventually be used to talk about the city of Bethel, but at this time it's talking about the area east of Bethel and north of Ai. There's kind of a flat plain area, probably agricultural land at this time. So he said to these spies, go up, spy out the land. So this is his procedure. He wants to know about cities. He wants to know what do they look like, how's the best way to take it. So the men went up and they spied out the land, spied out Ai first. They look at the city. And then they returned to Joshua and they said to him, you don't have to have all the people go up. Let 2,000 or 3,000 men go up and attack Ai. Do not make the whole people toil up there, for they are few. So about 3,000 men went up there from the people. So the report from the two spies, well, I guess I assume might be two spies again. They come back with a report of, wow, these guys are nothing like Jericho. We don't need a bunch of people. 2,000, 3,000 soldiers can certainly take this place. So Joshua takes their advice. That's what he sends. It doesn't go well. It says, and they fled before the men of Ai. So they attack the city, and the city guard comes out and responds, and people get killed. It says, the men of Ai killed about 36 of their men. Now, that's just over 1% of the force that went up. That's really not a high casualty rate in war, folks. I mean, every death is a bad thing. But as casualty rates go, that is very small. And yet the Israelis treated it as something unprecedented, something that routed them, broke their fighting spirit, and they ran away. Now, why is that? I think it's because in all the wars that they have fought recently, like the war against Sihon and the war against Og. That only happened last year, remember. I don't think they lost anybody. And then in the Jericho thing, I don't think they lost anybody either. So they have been used to fighting with zero casualties. Now that is unprecedented. You don't have zero casualties in most battles. And so to lose even a few people in a battle after having that record of zero losses, it broke them. And so they ran away before the gate of Ai as far as Shabarim and struck them at the descent. Now, we don't know where Shabarim is. The name seems to have a reference to this event because it's talking about the breakpoint or the collapsing point, the shattering point. So I think it got its name because of this. I think it may actually be the same thing as the Valley of Achor that we'll talk about later. So I think it's the lower portion of that wadi that was heading up to Ai and Luz, or Bethel, just right around the corner from Jericho. So that's where I think Shabarim was located. And the hearts of the people melted and became as water. Now, when we've seen that terminology before, it was in reference to the Canaanites. But now it's being used in reference to the Israelis. They're kind of freaked out by the fact that they lost people. And so Joshua's freaked out as well. Joshua tore his clothes. That's a sign of great grief. He fell to the earth on his face before the ark of He Who Is until the evening. So he is bowing down before the throne of God. He and the elders of Israel, so the entirety of the 70 elders of Israel, this would be the original Sanhedrin, and they put dust on their heads, which is another sign of grief. Joshua said, "Alas, O He Who Is God, why have you brought this people over the Jordan at all? To give us into the hand of the Amorites? To destroy us? Would that we had been content to dwell beyond the Jordan." So Joshua is a good guy, but he is frustrated here by this turn of events, and he can't believe it. And he asks God, "God, what's going on here? Did you bring us across the Jordan to then let this sort of thing happen, to wipe us out? Is that what this plan was? I wish we'd stayed on the other side of the Jordan. We had all that territory over there that you let us take, and we could have all just kind of subdivided that territory up." Verse 8, "Oh, He Who Is, what can I say? When Israel has turned their backs before their enemies, for the Canaanites and all the inhabitants of the land will hear of it. They'll surround us and cut off our name from the earth. And what will you do for your great name?" Now that is quite interesting. Moses, when he has his intercession with God from time to time, has brought up, "God, you made promises. You got to keep those promises. You can't wipe out the Israelis because you promised that they would be around." Well, here is Joshua saying, "God, our people ran away. They chickened out. And now the Canaanites and all the other people living in this land, they're going to figure out that we aren't as tough as we look or as we sounded like we were. And they're going to gang up on us and wipe us out. And then how's that going to keep your promises?" So he's following in the same sort of pattern as Moses. "God, you got to keep your promises." Now, God's response is interesting. "He Who Is said to Joshua, 'Get up. Why have you fallen on your face? Israel has sinned. They have transgressed my covenant that I commanded them. They have taken some of the devoted things, they've stolen, they've lied, and they put them among their own belongings. Therefore, the people of Israel cannot stand before their enemies. They turn their backs before their enemies because they've become devoted for the destruction themselves. I will be with you no more unless you destroy the devoted things from among you. Now, that wording, that phrasing, tells me that God is holding Joshua at least partly accountable for this. That Joshua should have been double-checking those people that came back from Jericho to make sure that they didn't have any of the devoted things. And that all of Israel, for not double-checking their compatriots to make sure that nobody violated that rule, all of them are responsible. And that God just simply went, okay, you want to go it alone? Let's see how that works out for you. And this is how it works out. You go up against another force in the flesh, without the Spirit's help, and you'll get your clock cleaned. And that's how those guys got killed. And so the only solution to it is, do it right this time. We'll have examples of this from time to time in Israeli history. One of the other ones that I think about is the movement of the Ark of the Covenant by David. David wanted to do a good thing to bring the Ark of the Covenant into the newly conquered city of Jerusalem, put it in a special place, but he didn't do it right. And somebody got killed in the process. And so there are consequences when we don't do things God's way. And that's not God's fault that consequences fall. It's our fault for not doing it the right way in the first place. And so that's what's going on in this story here. Verse 13, God continues, get up, consecrate the people. You know, devote them again. Because remember, they've de-devoted themselves by allowing some of the banned things to be taken privately. So reconsecrate the people. Say, consecrate yourself for tomorrow. For thus says he who is God of Israel, there are devoted things in your midst, O Israel. You cannot stand before your enemies until you take away the devoted things from among you. Now, why didn't God just simply say, Acher has them? Take him out, deal with him. Because this community needs to learn how to take care of itself. It needs to learn to police its own actions to keep them in line with the covenant. If God is going to constantly be standing over them and telling them exactly what to do every single time, then they're just puppets. They're not acting of their own free will. Same reason why God makes them go through this long drawn out process of identifying the culprit. He wants people of their own free will to act. You know, through this next process we're about to read, people who might have been aware that Acher was acting strangely could have stepped up and said something. Most certainly, Acher himself could have stepped up and said, I did it. I'm the culprit. But he doesn't. He makes it draw out to the very end. And I think because of that, brings even more judgment upon himself. Verse number 14. In the morning, therefore, you shall be brought near by your tribes. So everybody has to get into their big tribal groups. And the tribe that he who is takes by lot shall come near by clans. So this is going to be the use of the divine lot. The quote from the book of Proverbs is, the lot is cast into the lap, and every decision belongs to he who is. But this is a very special type of lot. This is the Urim and the Thummim that are being used. I'm convinced of that. Remember, the Urim and the Thummim were two stones that were kept in the pocket right behind the high priest's chest piece. This is Eleazar, who is going to ask a question that can be answered yes or no. And he probably starts with Reuben. Is it the Reuben tribe? And I believe the stones glowed one or the way or the other. And so the no answer comes. Is it the Simeon tribe? No. Is it the Levi tribe? No. Is it the Judah tribe? Yes. So God has identified to the people, I know which tribe the person came from. This would be another opportunity for Acher to step up and say, we don't need to go any farther. I did it. But he doesn't. He doesn't do the right thing. So then the clan that he who is takes shall come near by households, and the household that he who is takes shall come near by, name by man by man, and he who is taken with the devoted thing shall be burned with fire, he and all that he has, because he's transgressed the covenant of he who is, and because he has done an outrageous thing in Israel. A foolish thing is actually the meaning of the word. So now we see it actually happen. Joshua rose early in the morning. He brought Israel near tribe by tribe. First, the tribe of Judah was taken. Remember, the Urim and the Thummim is being used. He brought near all the clans of Judah, and they go through that process. Is it this clan? 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 No, 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 no. Is it the Zerah clan? Yes. So the clan of the Zerahites was taken. Then he brought near the clan of the Zerahites, man by man. And Zabdi was taken. So Zabdi is the eldest person in his extended family. So he's probably the grandpa of this group. And then they brought his family, his household, man by man, and Achan, or Acher, the son of Garmi, son of Zabdi, son of Zerah of the tribe of Judah, was taken. And now you understand why all of those names were kind of popping in earlier, because it shows the long drawn out process by which this guy was identified. And so Joshua said to Acher, my son, and we don't know how old Acher is, but Joshua treats him as much more younger than himself, and he's in his 80s. Give glory to he who is the God of Israel. Give praise to him. Now, I love the second bit of language there. Give praise. It means give thanks, literally in Hebrew. In the Greek Old Testament at this point, it's the word for confess, which means to acknowledge, to say the same thing that God has been saying, that something wrong has happened. So Joshua here is telling Acher, all right, you need to fess up. Make it right. Even at this late stage, he is given the chance to get it right. And I actually think that there is a good possibility we'll all get to meet Acher in glory. Because if he confesses this, which he does, then he can get forgiveness for it. Even though he ends up being executed, he is executed, I think, as a forgiven person. And I think that's one of the good things to come out of this story. So verse 19 to finish, tell me now what you've done. Don't hide it from me. So Acher answered Joshua, truly, I have sinned against he who is the God of Israel. This is what I did. When I saw among the spoil a beautiful cloak from Shinar, that's Babylonia, and 200 shekels of silver, and a bar of gold weighing 50 shekels, a little over a pound and a half, I think, I coveted them. I wanted them. So I took them. See? They're hidden in the earth inside my tent with the silver underneath. And this is the reason why his family's in trouble, is because they knew it was there. They would have. So Joshua sent messengers. They ran to the tent. Behold, it was hidden in his tent with the silver underneath. He took them out of the tent, brought them to Joshua, to all the people of Israel. They laid them down before he who is, because that's who they belong to, except for the cloak, because that was supposed to burn up. Joshua and all Israel with him took Achan, the son of Zerah, the silver, the cloak, the bar of gold, his sons, daughters, oxen, donkeys, sheep, tent, all that he had. They brought them to the valley of Achor. So the reason this valley gets its name is because of the person and the thing that happened. It's trouble, the valley of trouble. And Joshua said, "Why did you bring trouble on us? He who is brings trouble on you today." So just like you caused people to die, you will die today. And so all Israel stoned him with stones. They burned them with fire, stoned them with stones. And then they raised over him a great heap of stones that remains to this day. Remember, I believe that the author of this book is writing shortly after the death of Joshua. And so this is reporting there is an infamous monument right there at the entry to this wadi that goes up to Ai, to Bethel, it's been raised over the body of the person that brought trouble on Israel in the taking of Jericho. And so then he who is turned from his burning anger, and therefore to this day the name of that place is called the Valley of Achor, the Valley of Trouble. But it solved the issue. And so when we next get into the word, we will see how the city of Ai was finally taken by the militia of Israel.